Yes, this is a game for you, Jerry. It is a sport.
No, it is not.
Yes, it is, Norman said. It is a stupid sport.
Harry, standing beside Norman, said, You want to contradict him that way? You might make him mad. I don't think Jerry likes to be contradicted. I'm sure you don't, Norman thought. But he said, Well, I have to tell Jerry the truth about his own behavior. He isn't doing anything very interesting.
Oh? Not interesting?
No, you are being spoiled and petulant, Jerry.
Do you dare to speak to me in this fashion?
Yes, because you are acting stupidly.
Jeez, Harry said, take it easy with him.
I can easily make you regret your words, Norman. Norman was noticing, in passing, that Jerry's vocabulary and syntax were now flawless. All pretense of naivete, of an alien quality, had been dropped. But Norman felt stronger, more confident, as the conversation progressed. He knew whom he was talking to now. He wasn't talking to any alien. There weren't any unknown assumptions. He was talking to a childish part of another human being.
I have more power than you can imagine.
I know you have power, Jerry, Norman said. Big deal.
Harry became suddenly agitated. Norman, for Christ's sake! You're going to get us all killed.
Listen to Harry. He is wise. No, Jerry, Norman said. Harry is not wise. He is only afraid.
Harry is not afraid. Absolutely not.
Norman decided to let that pass. I'm talking to you, Jerry. Only to you. You are the one who is playing games.
Games are stupid.
Yes, they are, Jerry. They are not worthy of you.
Games are not of interest to any intelligent person.
Then stop, Jerry. Stop the manifestations.
I can stop whenever I want.
I am not sure you can, Jerry.
Yes, I can.
Then prove it. Stop this sport of manifestations.
There was a long pause. They waited for the response.
Norman, your tricks of manipulation are childish and obvious to the point of tedium. I am not interested in talking with you further. I will do exactly as I please, and I will manifest as I wish. Our habitat cannot withstand more manifestations, Jerry.
I do not care.
If you injure our habitat again, Harry will die.
Harry said, Me and everybody else, for Christ's sake. I do not care, Norman.
Why would you kill us, Jerry?
You should not be down here in the first place. You people do not belong here. You are arrogant creatures who intrude everywhere in the world, and you have taken a great foolish risk, and now you must pay the price. You are an uncaring, unfeeling species, with no love for one another.
That's not true, Jerry.
Do not contradict me again, Norman.
I'm sorry, but the unfeeling, uncaring person is you, Jerry. You do not care if you injure us. You do not care for our predicament. It is you who are uncaring, Jerry, not us. You.
Enough.
He's not going to talk to you anymore. Harry said, He's really mad, Norman.
And then the screen printed, I will kill you all. Norman was sweating. He wiped his forehead, turned away from the words on the screen.
I don't think you can talk to this guy, Beth said. I don't think you can reason with him.
You shouldn't have made him angry, Harry said. He was almost pleading.
Why did you make him angry like that, Norman?
I had to tell him the truth.
But you were so mean to him, and now he's angry.
It doesn't matter, angry or not, Beth said. Harry attacked us before when he wasn't angry.
You mean Jerry, Norman said to her. Jerry attacked us.
Yes, right, Jerry.
That's a hell of a mistake to make, Beth.
Harry said.
You're right, Harry. I'm sorry.
Harry was looking at her in an odd way. Norman thought, Harry doesn't miss a trick, and he isn't going to let that one go by.
I don't know how you could make that confusion, Harry said.
I know, it was a slip of the tongue. It was stupid of him.
I'll say. I'm sorry, Beth said. Really, I am.
Never mind, Harry said. It doesn't matter. There was a sudden flatness in his manner, a complete indifference in his tone. Norman thought, uh-oh. Harry yawned and stretched.
You know, he said, I'm suddenly very tired. I think I'll take a nap now.
And he went off to the bunks. 1600 hours.
We have to do something, Beth said. We can't talk him out of it.
You're right, Norman said. We can't. Beth tapped the screen. The words still glowed. I will kill you all.
Do you think he means it?
Yes. Beth stood, clenched her fists.
So it's him or us?
Yes, I think so. The implications hung in the air, unspoken.
This manifesting process of his, Beth said, you think he has to be completely unconscious to prevent it from happening?
Yes. Or dead, Beth said. Yes, Norman said. That had occurred to him. It seemed so improbable, such an unlikely turn of events in his life, that he would now be 1,000 feet under the water, contemplating the murder of another human being. Yet that was what he was doing.
I'd hate to kill him, Beth said.
Me too.
I mean, I wouldn't even know how to begin to do it.
Maybe we don't have to kill him, Norman said.
Maybe we don't have to kill him unless he starts something, Beth said. Then she shook her head. Oh, hell, Norman, who are we kidding? This habitat can't survive another attack. We've got to kill him. I just don't want to face up to it.
Neither do I, Norman said.
We could get one of those explosive spear guns and have an unfortunate accident, and then just wait for our time to be up for the Navy to come and get us out of here.
I don't want to do that.
I don't either, Beth said. But what else can we do?
We don't have to kill him, Norman said. Just make him unconscious.
He went to the first aid cabinet, started going through the medicines.
You think there might be something there? Beth said.
Maybe. An anesthetic? I don't know.
Would that work?
I think anything that produces unconsciousness will work, I think.
I hope you're right, Beth said. Because if he starts dreaming and then manifests the monsters from his dreams, that wouldn't be very good.
No, but anesthesia produces a dreamless, total state of unconsciousness.
Norman was looking at the labels on the bottles.
You know what these things are?
No, Beth said, but it's all on the computer. She sat down at the console.
Read me the names and I'll look them up for you.
Diphenylcholine. Beth pushed buttons, scanned a screen of dense text.
Looks like something for burns.
Ephedrine hydrochloride. Another screen.
I guess it's for motion sickness.
Valdomet.
It's for ulcers.
Syntag. Synthetic opium analog. It's very short acting.
Produces unconsciousness? Norman asked.
No, not according to this. Anyway, it only lasts a few minutes.
Tarazine. Tranquilizer. Causes drowsiness.
Good. He set the bottle to one side. And may also cause bizarre ideation.
No, he said, and put the bottle back. They didn't need to have any bizarre ideation.
Riordan.
Antihistamine for bites.
Oxalamine.
Antibiotic.
Chloramphenicol.
Another antibiotic.
Damn, they were running out of bottles.
Parasolutrine?
It's a soporific.
What's that? cause a sleep.
You mean it's a sleeping pill?
No, it says you can give it in combination with Paris and trichloride and use it as an anesthetic.
Paris and trichloride?
Yes, I have it here, Norman said.
Beth was reading from the screen.
Parasolutrine 20 cc's in combination with Paracin 6 cc's given IM produces deep sleep suitable for emergency surgical procedures. No cardiac side effects. Sleep from which the subject can be awakened only with difficulty. REM activity is suppressed.
How long does it last?
3 to 6 hours.
And how fast does it take effect?
She frowned.
It doesn't say.
After appropriate depth of anesthesia is induced, even extensive surgical procedures may be begun. But it doesn't say how long it takes.
Hell, Norman said.
It's probably fast,
Beth said.
But what if it isn't, Norman said.
What if it takes 20 minutes?
And can you fight it off?
She shook her head.
Nothing about that here. In the end, they decided on a mixture of Parasolutrine, Paracin, Dulcinea, and Syntag, the opiate.
Norman filled a large syringe with the clear liquids. The syringe was so big it looked like something for horses.
You think it might kill him? Beth said.
I don't know. Do we have a choice?
No, Beth said. We've got to do it. Have you ever given an injection before?
Norman shook his head.
You? Only lab animals.
Where do I stick it?
Do it in the shoulder, Beth said, while he's asleep.
Norman turned the syringe up to the light and squirted a few drops from the needle into the air.
Okay, he said. I better come with you, Beth said, and hold him down.
No, Norman said. If he's awake and sees both of us coming, he'll be suspicious. Remember, you don't sleep in the bunks anymore.
But what if he gets violent?
I think I can handle this.
Okay, Norman, whatever you say.
The lights in the corridor of C-Sill seemed unnaturally bright. Norman heard his feet padding on the carpet, heard the constant hum of the air handlers and the space heaters. He felt the weight of the syringe concealed in his palm. He came to the door to the sleeping quarters.
2 female Navy crewmen were standing outside the bulkhead door. They snapped to attention as he approached.
Dr. Johnson, sir.
Norman paused. The women were handsome, black, and muscular-looking.
At ease, men, Norman said with a smile.
They did not relax.
Sorry, sir. We have our orders, sir.
I see, Norman said.
Well, carry on, then.
He started to move past them into the sleeping area.
Beg your pardon, Dr. Johnson, sir.
They barred his way.
What is it?
Norman asked, as innocently as he could manage.
This area is off limits to all personnel, sir.
But I want to go to sleep.
Very sorry, Dr. Johnson, sir. No one may disturb Dr. Adams while he sleeps, sir.
I won't disturb Dr. Adams.
Sorry, Dr. Johnson, sir. May we see what is in your hand, sir?
In my hand?
Yes, there is something in your hand, sir.
They're snapping machine gun delivery. Always punctuated by the sir at the end, was getting on his nerves. He looked at them again. The starched uniforms covered powerful muscles. He didn't think he could force his way past them. Beyond the door, he saw Harry lying on his back, snoring. It was a perfect moment to inject him.
Dr. Johnson, may we see what is in your hand, sir?
No, damn it, you may not.
Very good, sir.
Norman turned and walked back to D-Sill. I saw, Beth said, nodding to the monitor. Norman looked at the monitor, at the 2 women in the corridor. Then he looked at the adjacent monitor, which showed the sphere.
The sphere has changed, Norman said.
The convoluted grooves of the doorway were definitely altered, the pattern more complex and shifted farther up.
Norman felt sure it was changed.
I think you're right, Beth said. When did that happen?
We can run the tapes back later, she said. Right now we'd better take care of those 2.
How? Norman said.
Simple, Beth said, bunching her fists again. We have 5 explosive spearheads in B-Sil. I'll go into B, get 2 of them, blow the guardian angels away. You run in and jab Harry.
Her cold-blooded determination would have been chilling if she didn't look so beautiful. There was a refined quality to her features now. She seemed to grow more elegant by the minute.
The spear guns are in B, Norman said.
Sure, look on video. She pressed a button.
Hell.
In B-Sil, the spear guns were missing. I think the son of a bitch has covered his bases, Norman said. Good old Harry. Beth looked at him thoughtfully. Norman, are you feeling okay?
Sure, why?
There's a mirror in the first aid kit. Go look. He opened the white box of the kit and looked at himself in the mirror. He was shocked by what he saw. Not that he expected to look good. He was accustomed to the pudgy contours of his own face and the gray stubble of his beard when he didn't shave on weekends. But the face, staring back at him, was lean, with a coarse jet-black beard. There were dark circles beneath smoldering, bloodshot eyes. His hair was lank and greasy, hanging over his forehead. He looked like a dangerous man.
I look like Dr. Jekyll, he said. Or rather, Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, you do.
You're getting more beautiful, he said to Beth. But I'm the man who was mean to Jerry, so I'm getting meaner.
You think Harry's doing this?
I think so, Norman said, adding to himself, I hope so.
You feel different, Norman?
No, I feel exactly the same. I just look like hell.
Yes, you look a little frightening.
I'm sure I do.
You really feel fine?
Beth.
Okay, Beth said.
She turned, looked back at the monitors. I have one last idea. We both get to A-Sil, put on our suits, get into B-Sil, and shut down the oxygen in the rest of the habitat. Make Harry unconscious. His guards will disappear. We can go in and jab him. What do you think?
Worth a try.
Norman put down the syringe. They headed off toward A-Sil. In C-Sil, they passed the 2 guards, who again snapped to attention.
Dr. Halpern, sir. Dr. Johnson, sir.
Carry on, men, Beth said.
Yes, sir.
May we ask where you were going, sir?
Routine inspection tour, Beth said. There was a pause.
Very good, sir.
They were allowed to pass. They moved into B-Sil with its array of pipes and machinery. Norman glanced at it nervously. He didn't like screwing around with the life support systems, but he didn't see what else they could do.
In A-Sil, there were 3 suits left. Norman reached for his.
Do you know what you're doing? He asked.
Yes, Beth said. Trust me.
She slipped her foot into her suit and started zipping it up. And then the alarms began to sound throughout the habitat, and the red lights flashed again. Norman knew, without being told, that it was the peripheral alarms. Another attack was beginning. 15-20 hours. They ran back through the lateral connecting corridor directly from B-Sil into D. Norman noticed in passing that the crewman had gone. In D, the alarms were clanging, and the peripheral sensor screens glowed bright red. Norman glanced at the video monitors.
I am coming.
Beth quickly scanned the screens. Inner thermals are activated. He's coming, all right. They felt a thump, and Norman turned to look out the porthole. The green squid was already outside, the huge suckered arms coiling around the base of the habitat. One great arm slapped flat against the porthole. The suckers distorted against the glass.
I am here.
Harry!
Beth shouted. There was a tentative jolt as squid arms gripped the habitat. The slow, agonizing creak of metal. Harry came running into the room.
What is it?
You know what it is, Harry, Beth shouted.
No, no, what is it?
It's the squid, Harry.
Oh, my God, no, Harry moaned.
The habitat shook powerfully. The room lights flickered and went out. There was only flashing red now from the emergency lights. Norman turned to him.
Stop it, Harry.
What are you talking about?
he cried plaintively. You know what I'm talking about, Harry.
I don't.
Yes, you do, Harry. It's you, Harry, Norman said. You're doing it.
No, you're wrong. It's not me. I swear it's not me.
Yes, Harry, Norman said. And if you don't stop it, we'll all die. The habitat shook again. One of the ceiling heaters exploded, showering fragments of hot glass and wire. Come on, Harry.
No, no.
There's not much time. You know you're doing it.
The habitat can't take much more, Norman,
Beth said.
It can't be me.
Yes, Harry. Face it, Harry. Face it now. Even as he spoke, Norman was looking for the syringe. He had left it somewhere in this room, but papers were sliding off the desktops, monitors crashing to the floor, chaos all around him. The whole habitat rocked again, and there was a tremendous explosion from another cylinder. New rising alarms sounded, and a roaring vibration that Norman instantly recognized. Water, under great pressure, rushing into the habitat.
Flooding in sea,
Beth shouted, reading the consoles. She ran down the corridor. He heard the metal clang of bulkhead doors as she shut them. The room was filled with salty mist. Norman pushed Harry against the wall.
Harry, face it and stop it.
It can't be me, it can't be me, Harry moaned. Another jolting impact staggering them.
It can't be me, Harry cried. It has nothing to do with me.
And then Harry screamed, and his body twisted, and Norman saw Beth withdraw the syringe from his shoulder, the needle tipped with blood.
What are you doing?
Harry cried, but already his eyes were glassy and vacant. He staggered at the next impact, fell drunkenly on his knees to the floor.
No,
he said softly.
No.
And he collapsed, falling face down on the carpet. Immediately, the wrenching of metal stopped. The alarms stopped. Everything became ominously silent, except for the soft gurgle of water from somewhere within the habitat. Beth moved swiftly, reading one screen after another. Inner off, peripherals off, everything off. All right, no readings. Norman ran to the porthole. The squid had disappeared. The sea bottom outside was deserted.
Damage report, Beth shouted. Main power out. E-cylinder out. C-cylinder out. B-cylinder...
Norman spun, looked at her. If B-cylinder was gone, their life support would be gone. They would certainly die.
B-cylinder holding,
she said finally. Her body sagged. We're okay, Norman. Norman collapsed on the carpet, exhausted, suddenly feeling the strain and tension in every part of his body. It was over. The crisis had passed. They were going to be all right after all. Norman felt his body relax. It was over. 12:30 hours. The blood had stopped flowing from Harry's broken nose, and now he seemed to be breathing more regularly, more easily. Norman lifted the ice pack to look at the swollen face and adjusted the flow of the intravenous drip in Harry's arm. Beth had started the intravenous line in Harry's hand after several unsuccessful attempts. They were dripping an anesthetic mixture into him. Harry's breath smelled sour, like tin, but otherwise he was okay, out cold. The radio crackled. I'm at the submarine, Beth said. Going aboard now. Norman glanced out the porthole at DH-7, saw Beth climbing up into the dome beside the sub. She was going to press the delay button, the last time such a trip would be necessary. He turned back to Harry. The computer didn't have any information about the effects of keeping a person asleep for 12 hours straight, but that was what they would have to do. Either Harry would make it or he wouldn't. Same as the rest of us, Norman thought. He glanced at the monitor clocks. They showed 12:30 hours and counted backward. He put a blanket over Harry and went over to the console. The sphere was still there, with its changed pattern of grooves. In all the excitement, he had almost forgotten his initial fascination with the sphere, where it had come from, what it meant. Although they understood now what it meant. What had Beth called it? A mental enzyme. An enzyme was something that made chemical reactions possible without actually participating in them. Our bodies needed to perform chemical reactions, but our body temperatures were too cold for most chemical reactions to proceed smoothly. So we had enzymes to help the process along.
speeded up.
The enzymes made it all possible. And she had called the sphere a mental enzyme. Very clever, he thought. Clever woman.
Her impulsiveness had turned out to be just what was needed. With Harry unconscious, Beth still looked beautiful. But Norman was relieved to find that his own features had returned to pudgy normalcy. He saw his own familiar reflection in the screen as he stared at the sphere on the monitor. That sphere. With Harry unconscious, he wondered if they would ever know exactly what had happened, exactly what it had been like. He remembered the lights like fireflies. And what had Harry said? Something about foam. The foam. Norman heard a whirring sound and looked out the porthole. The sub was moving. Freed of its tethers, the yellow minisub glided across the bottom, its lights shining on the ocean floor. Norman pushed the intercom button. Beth? Beth!
I'm here, Norman.
What are you doing?
Just take it easy, Norman.
What are you doing in the sub, Beth?
Just a precaution, Norman.
Are you leaving?
She laughed over the intercom, a light, relaxed laugh. No, Norman, just take it easy.
Tell me what you're doing.
It's a secret.
Come on, Beth.
This was all he needed, he thought, to have Beth crack up now. He thought again of her impulsiveness, which moments before he had admired. He did not admire it anymore. Beth?
Talk to you later, she said.
The sub turned in profile, and he saw red boxes in its claw arms. He could not read the lettering on the boxes, but they looked vaguely familiar. As he watched, the sub moved past the high fin of the spacecraft and then settled to the bottom. One of the boxes was released, plumping softly on the muddy floor. The sub started up again, churning sediment, and glided forward 100 yards. Then it stopped again and released another box. It continued this way along the length of the spacecraft. Beth? No answer. Norman squinted at the boxes. There was lettering on them, and he could not read them at this distance. The sub had turned now and was coming directly toward DH-8. The lights shone at him. It moved closer, and the sensor alarms went off, clanging and flashing red lights. He hated these alarms, he thought. Going over to the console, looking at the buttons, how the hell did you turn them off? He glanced at Harry, but Harry remained unconscious. Beth, are you there? You set off the damn alarms.
Push F8.
What the hell was F8? He looked around, finally saw a row of keys on the keyboard, numbered F1 to F20. He pushed F8, and the alarms stopped. The sub was now very close, lights shining into the porthole windows. In the high bubble, Beth was clearly visible, instrument lights shining up on her face. Then the sub descended out of view. He went to the porthole and looked out. Deep Star 3 was resting on the bottom, depositing more boxes from its claw hands. Now he could read the lettering on the boxes. Caution. No smoking. No electronics. TVAC explosives.
Beth? What the hell are you doing?
Later, Norman.
He listened to her voice. She sounded okay. Was she cracking up? No, he thought. She's not cracking up. She sounds okay. I'm sure she's okay. But he wasn't sure. The sub was moving again, its lights blurred by the cloud of sediment churned up by the propellers. The cloud drifted up past the porthole, obscuring his vision. Beth?
Everything's fine, Norman. Back in a minute.
As the sediment drifted down to the bottom again, he saw the sub heading back to DH-7. Moments later, it docked beneath the dome. Then he saw Beth climb out and tether the sub fore and aft. 1100 hours.
It's very simple, Beth said.
Explosives?
He pointed to the screen. It says here TVACs are, weight for weight, the most powerful conventional explosives known. What the hell are you doing putting them around the habitat?
Norman, take it easy. She rested her hand on his shoulder. Her touch was soft and reassuring. He relaxed a little, feeling her body so close. We should have discussed this together first.
Norman, I'm not taking any chances, not anymore.
But Harry is unconscious.
He might wake up.
He won't, Beth. I'm not taking any chances, she said. This way, if something starts to come out of that sphere, we can blow the hell out of the whole ship. I've put explosives along the whole length of it. But why around the habitat?
Defense.
How is it defense?
Believe me, it is.
Beth, it's dangerous to have that stuff so close to us. It's not wired up, Norman. In fact, it's not wired up around the ship, either. I have to go out and do that by hand. She glanced at the screens.
I thought I'd wait a while first, maybe take a nap. Are you tired?
No, Norman said.
You haven't slept in a long time, Norman.
I'm not tired. She gave him an appraising look.
I'll keep an eye on Harry, if that's what you're worried about.
I'm just not tired, Beth.
Okay, she said. Suit yourself.
She brushed her luxuriant hair back from her face with her fingers. Personally, I'm exhausted. I'm going to get a few hours. She started up the stairs to her lab, then looked down at him.
Want to join me?
What?
He said. She smiled at him, directly, knowingly. You heard me, Norman.
Maybe later, Beth.
Okay, sure.
She ascended the staircase, her body swinging smoothly, sensuously in the tight jumpsuit. She looked good in that jumpsuit. He had to admit it, she was a good-looking woman. Across the room, Harry snored in a regular rhythm. Norman checked Harry's ice pack and thought about Beth. He heard her moving around in the lab upstairs.
Hey, Norm?
Yes? He moved to the bottom of the stairs, looked up.
Is there another one of these down there? A clean one?
Something blue dropped into his hands. It was her jumpsuit.
Yes, I think they're in storage in B. Bring me one, would you, Norm?
Okay, he said. Going to B still, he found himself inexplicably nervous.
What was going on?
Of course, he thought he knew exactly what was going on. But why now? Beth was exerting a powerful attraction, and he mistrusted it. In her dealings with men, Beth was confrontational, energetic, direct, and angry. Seduction wasn't her method at all. It is now, he thought, fishing a new jumpsuit out of the storage locker. He took it back to D-Sill and climbed the ladder. From above, he saw a strange, bluish light. Beth?
I'm here, Norm.
He came up and saw her lying naked on her back, beneath a bank of ultraviolet sun lamps hinged out from the wall. She wore opaque cups over her eyes. She twisted her body seductively.
Did you bring the suit?
Yes, he said.
Thanks a lot. Just put it anywhere, by the lab bench.
Okay. He draped it over her chair. She rolled back to face the glowing lamps, sighed.
I thought I'd better get a little vitamin D, Norm.
Yes. You probably should, too. Yeah, probably. But Norman was thinking that he didn't remember a bank of sun lamps in the lab. In fact, he was sure that there wasn't one. He had spent a lot of time in that room. He would have remembered. He went back down the stairs quickly. In fact, the staircase was new, too. It was black anodized metal. It hadn't been that way before. This was a new descending staircase.
Norm? In a minute, Beth.
He went to the console and started punching buttons. He had seen a file before on habitat parameters or something like that. He finally found it. Deep Hab 8, MIPPR, design parameters. 5.024A, cylinder A. 5.024B, cylinder B. 5.024C, cylinder C. 5.024D, cylinder D. 5.024E, cylinder E. Choose one. He chose Cyl D, and another screen appeared. He chose design plans. He got page after page of architectural drawings. He flicked through them, stabbing at the keys, until he came to the detail plans for the biological laboratory at the top of D-Sill. Clearly shown in the drawings was a large sun lamp bank, hinged to fold back against the wall. It must have been there all the time. He just hadn't ever noticed it. There were lots of other details he hadn't noticed, like the emergency escape hatch in the domed ceiling of the lab, and the fact that there was a second fold-out bunk near the floor entrance, and a black anodized descending staircase. You're in a panic, he thought, and it has nothing to do with sun lamps and architectural drawings. It doesn't even have to do with sex. You're in a panic because Beth is the only one left besides you, and Beth isn't acting like herself. In the corner of the screen, he watched the small clock tick backward, the seconds clicking off with agonizing slowness. 12 more hours, he thought. I've just got to last 12 more hours and everything will be all right. He was hungry, but he knew there wasn't any food. He was tired, but there wasn't any place for him to sleep. Both E and C cylinders were flooded, and he didn't want to go upstairs with Beth. Norman lay down on the floor of D-Sill, beside Harry on the couch. It was cold and damp on the floor. For a long time, he couldn't sleep. 0900 hours. The pounding, that terrifying pounding, and the shaking of the floor awakened him abruptly. He rolled over and got to his feet, instantly alert. He saw Beth standing by the monitors. "What is it?" he cried. "What is it?"
"What is what?" Beth said. She seemed calm. She smiled at him.
Norman looked around. The alarms hadn't gone off. The lights weren't flashing.
"I don't know," I thought. "I don't know."
He trailed off.
"You thought we were under attack again?" she said.
He nodded.
"Why would you think that, Norman?" she said.
Beth was looking at him again in that odd way, an appraising way, her stare very direct and cool. There was no hint of seductiveness to her. If anything, she conveyed the suspiciousness of the old Beth. "You're a man, and you're a problem."
"Harry's still unconscious, isn't he? So why would you think we were being attacked?"
"I don't know. I guess I was dreaming."
Beth shrugged.
"Maybe you felt the vibration of me walking on the floor," she said. "Anyway, I'm glad you decided to sleep."
That same appraising stare, as if there were something wrong with him. "You haven't slept enough, Norman."
"None of us have."
"You particularly."
"Maybe you're right." He had to admit he felt better now that he had slept for a couple of hours. He smiled. "Did you eat all the coffee in Danish?"
"There isn't any coffee in Danish, Norman."
"I know."
"Then why would you say that?" she asked seriously.
"It was a joke, Beth."
"Oh, just a joke. You know, a humorous reflection on our condition."
"I see." She was working with the screens. "By the way, what did you find out about the balloon?"
"The balloon?"
"The surface balloon. Remember we talked about it?"
He shook his head. He didn't remember.
"Before I went out to the sub, I asked about the control codes to send a balloon to the surface, and you said you'd look in the computer and see if you could find how to do it."
"I did?"
"Yes, Norman, you did."
He thought back.
He remembered how he and Beth had lifted Harry's inert, surprisingly heavy body off the floor, setting him on the couch, and how they had staunched the flow of blood from his nose while Beth had started an intravenous line, which she knew how to do from her work with lab animals. In fact, she had made a joke, saying she hoped Harry fared better than her lab animals, since they usually ended up dead. Then Beth had volunteered to go to the sub, and he had said he'd stay with Harry.
That was what he remembered, nothing about any balloons.
"Sure," Beth said. "Because the communication said we were supposed to acknowledge transmission, and that means a radio balloon sent to the surface. And we figured with the storm abating, the surface conditions must be calm enough to allow the balloon to ride without snapping the wire. So it was a question of how to release the balloons. And you said you'd look for the control commands."
"I really don't remember," he said. "I'm sorry."
Norman, we have to work together in these last few hours, Beth said.
I agree, Beth, absolutely.
How are you feeling now? She said.
Okay. Pretty good, in fact.
Good, she said.
Hang in there, Norman. It's only a few more hours. She hugged him warmly. But when she released him, he saw in her eyes that same detached, appraising look. An hour later, they figured out how to release the balloon. They distantly heard a metallic sizzle as the wire unwound from the outside spool, trailing behind the inflated balloon as it shot toward the surface. Then there was a long pause.
What's happening? Norman said.
We're 1,000 feet down, Beth said. It takes a while for the balloon to get to the surface. Then the screen changed, and they got a readout of surface conditions. Wind was down to 15 knots. Waves were running 6 feet. Barometric pressure was 20.9. Sunlight was recorded.
Good news, Beth said. The surface is okay.
Norman was staring at the screen, thinking about the fact that sunlight was recorded. He had never longed for sunlight before. It was funny what you took for granted. Now the thought of seeing sunlight struck him as unbelievably pleasurable. He could imagine no greater joy than to see sun and clouds and blue sky.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking I can't wait to get out of here.
Me too, Beth said.
But it won't be long now. Pong, 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 pong. Norman was checking Harry, and he spun up a sound. What is it, Beth? Pong, 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 pong. Take it easy, Beth said at the console. I'm just figuring out how to work this thing. Pong, 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 pong. Work what?
The side-scanning sonar. False aperture sonar. I don't know why they call it false aperture. Do you know what that refers to, false aperture?
Pong, 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 pong. No, I don't, Norman said. Turn it off, please.
The sound was unnerving.
It's marked FAS, which I think stands for false aperture sonar, but it also says side scanning. It's very confusing. Beth, turn it off.
Pong, 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 pong.
Sure, of course, Beth said. Why do you want to know how to work that, anyway? Norman said. He felt irritable, as if she'd intentionally annoyed him with that sound.
Just in case, Beth said.
In case what, for Christ's sake? You said yourself that Harry's unconscious. There aren't going to be any more attacks.
Take it easy, Norman, Beth said. I want to be prepared, that's all.
0720 hours. He couldn't talk her out of it. She insisted on going outside and wiring the explosives around the ship. It was an absolutely fixed idea in her mind.
But why, Beth? He kept saying.
Because I'll feel better after I do it, she said. But there isn't any reason to do it.
I'll feel better if I do, she insisted.
And in the end, he couldn't stop her. He saw her now, a small figure with a single glowing light from her helmet, moving from one crate of explosives to another. She opened each crate and removed large yellow cones, which looked rather like the cones that highway repair trucks used. These cones were wired together, and when the wiring was completed, a small red light glowed at the tip. He saw small red lights all up and down the length of the ship. It made him uneasy. When she left, he had said to her, But you won't wire up the explosives near the habitat.
No, Norman, I won't.
Promise me.
I told you I won't.
If it's going to upset you, I won't. It's going to upset me.
Okay, okay.
Now the red lights were strung along the length of the ship, starting at the dimly visible tail, which rose out of the coral bottom. Beth moved farther north toward the rest of the unopened crates. Norman looked at Harry, who snored loudly but who remained unconscious. He paced back and forth in D-cell, and then went to the monitors. The screen blinked.
I am coming.
Oh, God, he thought. And in the next moment he thought, How can this be happening? It can't be happening. Harry was still out cold. How could it be happening?
I am coming for you.
Beth! Her voice sounded tinny on the intercom.
Yes, Norman?
Get the hell out of there!
Do not be afraid, the screen said